Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hodge & Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Hey there, folks. Welcome to another episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo. It's me, your host, Joe Tantillo, and I am joined here today by friend of the pod, Drew Wright, Hodge & Russ partner, and also by first-time member of the pod panel, Brandon Borg, Hodge & Russ associate. Guys, welcome, and thank you for joining me here today. We are here to talk about the next exciting installment of the Zelensky saga, which is the recent ALJ determination that was released in mid-December of 2023, stating the date for all of you listening to this, not in the year 2023 or 2024. But the determination came out, and boy, do we have a lot of thoughts. This is going to be probably a rapid-fire roundtable discussion here because I think everybody's eager to dive into some of the analysis that the judge used. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Professor Edward Zelensky is a professor at Cardozo School of Law. He is a resident of the state of Connecticut. Cardozo School of Law, if you are not familiar with it, is located in New York State. So we are dealing specifically with the non-resident allocation of Professor Zelensky's wage income that he has paid for his services to Cardozo University School of Law. And the issue with respect to the non-resident allocation is, of course, our favorite topic here on the show, the convenience rule. The convenience rule, which states that if you are a non-resident working remotely and you are assigned primarily to work from a New York office, that any days worked remotely can be treated as and will be treated as New York days for purposes of your New York workday allocation fraction. So essentially, your numerator is going to go up while your denominator goes up. And we've talked about all of this before. I won't get into the nitty gritty more than that. What we will talk about is Professor Zelensky's continued saga against the convenience rule, trying to get it ruled as unconstitutional and or inapplicable in a certain tax year. And this one was interesting because we had COVID. We had COVID, and there was an argument put forward about the necessity versus convenience aspect of the rule. And we'll get to that in a second, but I guess we might as well start with his, you know, his fair apportionment position on his 29 income, which is a callback to the original Zelensky case from back in the day.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not a lot of surprise with respect to the determination on the 2019 arguments and the constitutional issue. I think, you know, the short of it is the judge sort of said stare decisis, right? The Zelensky has fought this battle before all the way up to the Court of Appeals and lost on these arguments. And so the, you know, look, the judge did her analysis and she discussed these issues, but basically, you know, just sort of said, you know, same answer as what you got before.
Yeah, I asked Brandon before we got on the podcast today if it was appropriate or inappropriate to say stare decisis is dead. Depends on your view of some of the recent Supreme Court precedent that I won't get into, but I think that there's a school of thought amongst younger attorneys that stare decisis does not necessarily have the significance that it once did, even if you still believe in your heart that it is important. So I thought it was, you know, from my point of view, I was like, huh, we're going back to that, even though there are some courts in the land that may not necessarily really think about that anymore.
How quaint.
Yes, yes. Like, I was like, well, didn't the Supreme Court recently have a big case where they were just like, oh, no, if we think we got it wrong, we can just go back at will. But that is not what New York decided to do here, at least not at the administrative law judge level. Who knows what the analysis will be in the later levels of this. But, you know, of course, there was also some dormant commerce clause analysis here. Dormant commerce clause, which also may be dead based on recent Supreme Court precedent. So the 2019 stuff was just in a world of its own. Of,
yeah.
Like, is this even all relevant?
I mean, certainly anymore? One thing of value I think you can take from the 2019 discussion and the judge's discussion of the internal consistency test is, though not explicitly stated, implicitly stated in the analysis, that there must be a reverse convenience rule, right? We have this issue come up all of the time in our audits where we have folks who are working remotely within New York, even though they're residents of some other state and even though they're based out of an office in some other state. And the idea that, the convenience rule works in reverse the same way it does in the normal course is something that you have to have as a result of the internal consistency test. So that's in there, and you know, that's good stuff for issues down the road when we have the reverse convenience rule come up.
The one other point I wanted to make with respect to this dormant commerce clause analysis, and I've highlighted this here, is from the first Zielinski case where they talk about the taxpayers crossing of state lines to do work at home simply does not impact upon any interstate market in which residents and non-residents compete so as to implicate the commerce clause. And it just rubs me the wrong way because it totally disregards the concept of taxpayers on aggregate. Like, to narrow it to a single taxpayer is like decidedly not how we're supposed to look at it. But that's for another day. That's a different level of of constitutional analysis. But I'm like, I don't know, isn't like a lot of taxpayers crossing state lines very much tied to interstate commerce and impacting interstate commerce?
Yep. I think for sure that's the argument. And I think our friend Professor Zielinski is going to continue to make those arguments as the case progresses beyond this initial level.
Most likely. I don't know if he will be successful on those arguments, but where I thought he was for sure going to be successful, and I think we all hoped he was going to be successful, was on the apportionment of his 2020 wage income. Because his argument was, since it was COVID, and since there was a state of emergency throughout the state, and since the former governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, said, you cannot go to your office, you must work at home, and all these businesses shut down and, in effect, did not have physical offices anymore, we thought, certainly, logic would lead you to the conclusion that, at that point, you're no longer working at home for your own convenience. You are working at home out of necessity. And yet, the ALJ did not agree.
Well, and she's not alone, right? So no. The ALJ in Zielinski's determination did not agree. About a week before that, a different ALJ in an order in a case we're handling, in a case called Matter of Richter, did not agree. So we've got two judges who have now looked at this and weighed in within the last month, and both have sort of come out the same way. So I'll caveat all of my really strong feelings and points of view on these issues by saying that we clearly have a vested interest in this issue, given our representation of the taxpayer in the Richter case.
Yeah. And, you know, I've not been coy about my opinions on the convenience rule, you know, in many podcasts prior. So it should be no surprise that I was disappointed with this result just because I don't think it's a very sensible or fair rule, which is funny because the analysis kind of permeates throughout. Like, well, we shouldn't give non-resident taxpayers who work from home special benefits that New York resident taxpayers wouldn't get because they were working from home. And all I can think of is like, yeah, well, we're also not extending New York State benefits to non-resident taxpayers. Like, it cuts both ways, but non-residents can't vote. So what are they going to do about the law being the way it is?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and look, we talk about that issue all the time in the context of some of the residency issues that we confront. It's easy for New York to be aggressive in the non-resident space as a result of that particular issue. To me, the 2020 stuff is the most interesting part of these decisions because, yep, I think we all sort of went into the Zielinski case thinking that the constitutional arguments were not going to find an audience at the administrative level. But this other issue, on a really practical level, it just doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense, right? We have a post-COVID situation that everyone lived through where there were government mandates, where there were employers closing their offices, and you have employees as a result, almost universally for some period of time, working from home, not because they wanted to, but because they were obligated to, right? They were instructed to do so by either the government or their employer. And so the idea that this was a convenience to these folks and that they were exercising some choice is just kind of antithetical to the reality that we all live through. And I think the analysis that both of these judges have sort of gone through to get to the conclusion that the convenience rule ought to still apply to these people, it stretches what is reasonable. You look at both of these decisions, And where I think the judges have kind of gone astray is in the idea that the convenience rule only applies in a situation where the employee doesn't have a choice, right? And so you look at the language in the decision and the judge, you know, for instance, in the Richter decision says, effectively, the taxpayer could have potentially found some other place to work, right? The office in New York was closed. We get it. He chose to work from his home outside of New York. But the taxpayer hasn't proven that there was no other place that he could have worked within New York. And the judge in Zielinski says something similar, right?
Yeah, that stuck out to me as well, because you would think that, first of all, this would be more analogous to a situation where an employer had no New York office to begin with, and certainly we have not seen in those cases New York State or the tax department try and suggest, well, just because there is no New York office, the work could have been performed in New York, and so therefore it starts to get a little messy, right?
Yeah, that's what's particularly troubling here, right, is you could read that part of the analysis in these two cases to suggest that it does not matter whether there's an office, right? If there's some other place that the taxpayer could work in New York, that's enough. And if you back out of the context of these cases, that's effectively everyone, right? I mean, we'll talk about some of the other circumstances that are addressed in the Zielinski case when they discuss, you know, the Fast case and some of these other cases. But you could just as easily make the same argument with respect to the taxpayer in that Fast case, right? The Fast case dealt with someone who lived in New Jersey, who very clearly worked for an employer that was based in New York, had an office there. But the Fast case dealt with a taxpayer who had these, quote, specialized facilities at his home in New Jersey. And the idea was, well, he did not have the ability to do certain kinds of work that he needed to do at the office in New York. He had that ability in New Jersey. And so even though he's working at home, these specialized facilities kind of make his situation unique, right? And therefore, he's performing those services at the necessity of his employer. But under the logic of Zielinski and Richter judges, why couldn't he have just lived in New York and had the same facilities in New York? He decidedly could have, right?
Why could the employer not provide for these same facilities somewhere else in the state outside of their office?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it definitely gets muddled as soon as you start to think about it a little more past the words on the page.
It becomes difficult to square the analysis in Zielinski and Richter in this area with prior cases that have dealt with the convenience rule.
And I wonder what the determination would have been if the facts were a little different. I think one of the crazy parts about this particular case is that COVID was obviously impacting pretty much everyone statewide, short of essential workers. But I would have to imagine, let's say you have a single employer that has a New York office, and imagine it's, you know, hypothetical, it's undergoing a gut renovation, right? And the employer in that case says you have to work from home because you can't work from our office because it's inaccessible. Prior to these, I would have said, yeah, of course, those are not going to be convenience days. You're working from home out of necessity. Now it almost seems like, to the extent the employee can still like go to a cafe. Most people right now can do work on their computer from anywhere. They can go to a cafe and sit there and do their work if they have Wi-Fi and their laptop. Like, is that the new standard? Like, oh, your employer's office was inaccessible. They told you to work from home. But actually, you could have worked from the Starbucks on, you know, 7th Ave. So those are still New York workdays. Like, that's a little bit what this feels like.
It's what it feels like to me, for sure, right? Because, I mean, you could imagine lots and lots of situations, you know, factual kind of examples where this would become an issue. And the language in the case that was particularly troubling to me was in the Richter case that the taxpayer had not established that the employer required him to work from a particular out-of-state location as opposed to, quote, anywhere else, right? The idea being they didn't direct you to work specifically from your home in North Carolina. To your point, Joe, you could have worked from the Starbucks down the street. You could have gotten an Airbnb out on the island and worked in New York State. You could have stayed in a New York City apartment and worked there. There are endless possibilities that would have resulted in continuing to work in New York. But because this taxpayer chose to live in North Carolina and work from home, and he was required to work remotely, that somehow the convenience rule should still apply to him.
Yeah, and I think it makes my stomach turn a little bit because, you know, sure, would a sophisticated employer, corporate entity who can afford advice from knowledgeable tax advisors, you know how to interpret this and handle it the right way in the event of another emergency or a gut renovation, to tell their employees specifically, like, you, Johnny taxpayer, are assigned to work from your home address located at, you know, insert address here that is out of state. Great for those people. But the people that always end up getting like trapped in these things are the people who are working for smaller businesses that have no reason to know, that are just like, yeah, the office is closed. Like, and then the people just work from home out of state and are going to have a situation where they maybe end up getting taxed twice on their wage income. And that's what really sucks about the slippery slope presented here.
Yeah. And I think it boils down to, Joe, what we talked about the definitions of convenience and necessity here. You know, Professor Zielinski, his school at Cardozo closes and he's forced to work from his home in Connecticut. Is he doing that for his own convenience, or like where else is he supposed to work in New York? I think, you know, clearly it's a matter of his necessity that he doesn't have anywhere else to work in New York. And, you know, we made this point off the pod just about how, using the reasoning that the ALJ has here, it would necessitate a scenario such as Cardozo setting up an office for him to work on the sidewalk outside of the law school, you know, and that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, where does an employer's necessity begin at this point? Like, if this is not it, like, I just don't know where the line is. Like, global pandemic wasn't sufficient to create an element of necessity for these employers. Like, the employers still needed these people to work, and they weren't permitted to leave their houses. So it seems to me that it would be pretty necessary for them to work from home, unless the suggestion is like everybody should have just ceased business operations, like, which certainly is not the suggestion, but like it gets to that point, because it's just like, well, I don't know what you mean by employer's necessity then, because it cannot just be this instance in FAS of location nearby special facilities. Like, it's just, this is one of those cases where like you needed to move away from a strict reading of the facts in FAS and understand that even though this is not factually analogous, the underlying reasoning behind the application of the term necessity there is what should have been carried through. And, you know, we see that all the time as attorneys, where sometimes people just get so fixated on like, well, that's just, it's just not factually analogous, so we have to completely distinguish it. It's like, great. You can go ahead and you can distinguish this all day, but the legal reasoning and the underlying logic is sound. And that's what the takeaway should have been.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened here. The ALJ writes that the facts in the present case, Zielinski, are easily distinguishable from that in FAS. And, you know, in FAS, we were dealing with a New Jersey resident who worked for a magazine publisher that dealt with a special variety of items, and they wrote on different specialty areas like, you know, sports cars, motorcycles, firearms. So the taxpayer in FAS was required to have, you know, a ballistic setup at his home, garages to house these motorcycles and cars that he was reviewing, you know, a stable for different animals. And, you know, in that case, that came out, and the ALJ in that case ruled that the specialized nature of the employee's work and his profession could not have been performed at his employer's offices in New York. And here in Zielinski, we have a case where not only could his work not have been performed, the office was closed. It was impossible for him to perform his work at Cardozo.
It in effect did not exist. Like, for all practical purposes, it might as well have just been nowhere in the state.
Yep.
Eliminated.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it gets to, you know, my biggest issue with both of these decisions, Zelensky and Richter, which is if you go and read that FAST case, you can distinguish the facts. The facts in these cases are decidedly different than they were in the FAST case. But both the judge in Zelensky and the judge in Richter suggested that the question, the relevant question, was whether the employee could have performed their services for the employer anywhere in New York. And if you read the FAST case, the court said that's not the question. The question is whether the employee could have performed the services at the employer's New York office.
Yep.
And, you know, to your other point, there's a strict standard that we apply here for these convenience cases, and it's a high burden to meet that the convenience rule should not apply. If it doesn't apply in the situation where the New York office is closed, when does this argument succeed then, right?
Yeah, I think the answer is almost like that it doesn't, and in the thinking and the analysis put forward in this determination, which may not hold upon appeal, but as it's written now, you know, let's fast forward a year, year and a half, or however long it takes to appeal this up to the Court of Appeals, three or four years, realistically. Let's assume it all kind of holds through. You're essentially creating a super steroided up version of the convenience rule where the only real exception is this necessity based on being near specialized equipment, or truly, you know, the other exceptions being assigned to an out-of-state office. But the Hayes exception feels like it's eroded by this.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, we haven't talked about this yet, but there's some language in the determination that cites to Wayfair, which essentially hints at the idea that physical presence is no longer needed to be present and or interact with a state, which, to couch this, Wayfair is a sales tax case. It deals with businesses. Here, it was used to basically say, like, the world is changing and therefore the law is changing, and the law kind of already says, like, you don't need to be physically present in a state to be there, which by that thinking, you could theoretically start, you know, the Hayes exception says zero New York workdays. But if a meeting on my laptop over Zoom with the team in New York counts as a New York workday, then like that goes away pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I've got all sorts of issues with the part of the determination that delves into the Wayfair case. At a really basic level, what you're suggesting, I think, is the natural result of that, right? If we're going to suggest that in a current world, with all the technology, folks can work virtually just as effectively as they can in person, and as a result, we have to look at this all differently. There are lots of people who work for employers that are very clearly New York-based employers. But what the Hayes case said is that can be true. And if I work 100% of my time outside of New York, I don't spend a single day working in New York, I work virtually all of my time, the convenience rule doesn't apply to me, right? And it just gets back to the law. The law says for an allocation to need to be made on wage income, you have to work partly within and partly without New York. If you work 100% of your time without New York, you're not even in the world where you allocate your wages. This decision would suggest, well, geez, we live in a different world now. You can work all your time virtually, and it's as if you're physically present in New York.
Yeah, which really brings into serious questions there about how that could potentially be applied to just like standard allocation of wages, right? Like outside of the regular convenience rule where you would think, you know, oh, I'm not even assigned to a New York office. Like I don't need to worry about that. But if the law by the tax department suggests that a virtual connection to New York is the same as a physical connection to New York, well, then that's a physical New York workday. When you start getting into the context of Wayfair and the idea that we live in like this borderless society where you can be everywhere via the internet, and therefore we need to completely change how our tax rules work. Like, it's one thing to do that in the context of businesses that are operating online on huge marketplaces like Amazon and making sure that they're held accountable for sales that they're making in you know, 50 states and or all over the world. But when you start doing it on an individual basis to individual taxpayers, and you have people who, you know, maybe they have a couple Zooms with the team in California a month, a couple Zooms with the team in Massachusetts, a couple Zooms with the team in Chicago. And if all of a sudden the expectation would be that, you know, that person needs to basically allocate wages to those states because they Zoomed with the team that is primarily based there, now we're in just absolute tax hell.
Yeah. It becomes terror pretty quickly. And,
yeah.
And, you know, things fall apart. I mean, look, I think in the judge's defense, I think Professor Zielinski sort of brought the Wayfair case into this, I think, to suggest that, you know, when he litigated this issue, what, 30 years ago for the first time, that the world is different now, right?
Yes.
I think he was suggesting the world is different, and Wayfair showed that on a very sort of broad level. I think that's the point he was trying to make, and
yeah.
I think the judge maybe felt obligated to respond to that. But the idea that you can take the Wayfair decision and apply it, as you suggested, to the individual context and say, well, now all of a sudden virtual presence for personal income tax purposes equals physical presence is frankly just a bit nutty, right? The judge doesn't get to make law. There is law here, and
yeah.
she has to interpret it. This just goes beyond the bounds of what the law says.
It's just one of those things that, like, I don't think that particular piece of this necessarily goes any further beyond the appeal level. I think that tribunal may just completely ignore that portion of the analysis because I don't think it's necessary to the outcome that was reached here. But it's just one of those things that makes you a little bit nervous. Like, this suggestion like that, it's classic slippery slope, and just being an attorney and reading into it too much, but being like, let's be cautious with our analysis because you can take something like that, and if it is held up as, you know, good law to a certain extent, like, you don't want to see where it could run to.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think that that probably dies on the vine there. I
yeah.
think it's something that could have just been left out of the determination. But there's a section earlier on in the Zielinski determination that deals with the 2020 issue where the judge finds that the fact that the employer, right here, Cardozo, did not provide accommodations for the employee, but instead, quote, allowed the employee to work at home out of state, doesn't by itself constitute necessity or requirement for out of state work by the employer. And to me, there's huge slippery slope there too, right? Because you could read that to suggest that in situations where an employer who is somehow, quote, New York based, doesn't provide an office of any kind, that now we can apply the convenience rule to those employees who then work remotely when there is no office, not just because an office is closed because of COVID.
Yeah, and that's obviously not good for for those remote workers if that's where all of this is heading. And maybe the tax department feels particularly confident in their convenience rule positions. Like, maybe they, you know, none of these decisions are predetermined or, you know, known before they're going to come out. But the convenience rule is something that has just been discussed at length, and there's been many cases on it beforehand. And perhaps it's just that it's been so many years now that they are just like, yeah, this is going to be upheld at the tribunal, at the appellate division, and at the Court of Appeals. And it could just be that that's that. And maybe there is a belief that, you know, the Supreme Court of the United States would be loath to take on a state taxation issue like this, so it will just die at the Court of Appeals level. That is all speculative, certainly. What did you guys think about the point that was made about forcing New York employers to turn into interstate actors, like, against their will? That stood out to me as an odd portion of the analysis. Like, we cannot say that this was, you know, for necessity, because that would be making these New York-based employers be part of interstate commerce against their will. I don't know if it was against their will, but, like, it's like forcing them into it.
Yeah,
I didn't really understand what the purpose of that point of the analysis was.
I don't know that I did either. It was kind of a bizarre point. And I guess the idea is that we somehow put the employers on the hook if we allow this, right? That there are other sort of consequences that could inure to the employers if the employees who were working remotely outside of the state are now, you know, sort of treated as having those workdays in that state. But I don't know. I don't know that I really followed what the...
Yeah, I guess that is true from the extent of like, okay, if we acknowledge this, then all those employers are locked into whatever reporting of tax in those states. Physical presence can usually gives nexus for corporate income tax purposes. Unemployment taxes, withholding, et cetera, all becomes an issue. But do we not think that all those employers are probably aware of that and probably were we don't really have a choice because our offices cannot be used.
And maybe more importantly, right, aren't those things true? Whether these days that we're worried about for the relevant employee count as New York work days or days in the other state, right?
Yes.
Either way, the employee is physically present in that other state working, right?
Yep. Yeah, I thought that was odd. Brandon, you looked like you were going to make a point before and I totally cut you off.
No, it's all good, Joe. I was going to say, doesn't the government make... You know, employers do a lot of things without their consent. Why in this case is this such a concern for the ALJ?
Yes. Like you mean like shutter their doors and not allow them to conduct business?
That's exactly what I mean, Joe. Yes.
But now that it comes time to pay the bill, we can't force them to do anything. I do think about, you know, what the financial implications would be to the state were they to rule that the convenience rule did not apply in this situation. Granted, yeah, there are a handful of taxpayers that were maybe aware of this and were fighting it or planned around it, but there had to be a ton of people that just don't even know what the convenience rule is, that basically just either paid twice or you know, paid New York and are due a refund. And I have to imagine that like the potential refund, and granted the statute might be long expired by the time that a final decision comes around. So that point could
be... Wouldn't that be convenient for New York State, Joe?
And now you would
be entering what Chris Doyle calls, you know, tinfoil hat theory land. But the timing here is interesting, right? Because I think when we look back on this particular part of the Zelensky case, this 2020 part of the case, that it's a very limited scope issue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, effectively, the arguments that are being made for that part of this case are now dead, right? Like that situation is just not really occurring anymore where employers are forcing employees to work 100% of their time remotely. So there's a very limited window of time where this issue is going to matter to folks. And it's effectively the 2020 and 2021 tax years. For a lot of people, it's 2020. Those tax returns filed in 21, statute of limitations expiring next year, right? And so to your point, if there are folks out there who paid this tax initially because they didn't know any better or who got audited early on and New York said the convenience rule applies to you and they just rolled over and paid the tax, this fight's going to take a long time to be resolved. And if those kinds of taxpayers are interested in preserving their rights, they got to act, right? Because if I paid the tax, I need to file a refund claim and I need to do so before that statute expires. So, you know, as you look forward, it's like, you know, there's maybe less than a year to a year and a half of time before the statute expires on the periods that are going to matter to virtually all taxpayers who have this issue.
Tinfoil hat is on. I think there's a lot more that we can talk about with respect to this, but understanding that we have already consumed a lot of our listeners' time, I'm going to ask for any final thoughts.
I mean, I think this is just the initial reaction of two particular judges, right?
Yes.
I think we're this issue is being confronted in lots of different matters. I'm aware of at least one other matter that is currently at the Division of Tax Appeals with similar facts. I don't know that there is universal support for the kind of analysis that was conducted by these two particular judges amongst all the judges at the Division of Tax Appeals. So I'm interested to see what else happens in some of these cases over the coming months or the next year or so. We may get more sort of analysis from different judges in some of those cases. And then, look, Professor Zelensky has made clear his intention to kind of pursue this, right? So,
yes. So
to your point a few minutes ago, you know, we got to stay tuned, right? Because it's going to be probably several years before there's finality here.
Yeah, which is exciting for all of you tax fans out there. You get to listen to this for years and years and years, 100 years of state tax talks.
Yeah, I agree with Drew. I'm really excited to see when some of these convenience rule cases that are in the pipeline now come to fruition, where other judges might rule on this issue. And one thing that really stuck out to me in this decision is throughout this case, there's this argument that if we allow non-residents to allocate their income, such as Zelensky, then they would be deriving a special tax benefit because they didn't work in New York. And it just seems like the department is focused on kind of buttoning up all these COVID cases and making it so they're not going to put any precedent out there that's going to allow people that were in these situations during COVID with all these office closures to escape New York tax. And I mean, we all lived through that. You know, Joe, we were at Syracuse Law when all this was happening. We were forced to do remote law school. So
it was terrible.
I think we can all say that there was nothing convenient about it. And it's just interesting that that hasn't reflected in these decisions to this point.
Yes, I agree. There was nothing convenient about it at all. I certainly think it's going to be exciting to watch. If I had to place a bet on what I think the final outcome will be, I think that the constitutional issues in the long term will be struck down, that the court will uphold the convenience rule on the constitutional basis. I don't think that it's going anywhere under that theory. I do, however, think that long term, the convenience versus necessity portion of this, because of the statewide mandated office closures, I do think that issue ends up as a win for the taxpayer. Although I think, as we highlighted moments ago, it won't be that beneficial to lots and lots of taxpayers out there who ultimately did pay the tax. But as someone who is a fan of reason and logic and
the
sound
Buffalo
analysis
Bills.
And the Buffalo Bills, let's go. As a fan of all of those things, I really want to see this come out in favor of the taxpayer because it just seems like it should, right? Like it just seems obvious. It just seems like because they could not go into the office might as well have not existed. It was out of necessity that they had to work at home, and therefore the convenience rule should not apply. Like it, just, to me, it just seems very basic, and I hope that eventually one of the appeals courts in New York State will say, yes, duh, of course this should be resolved this way. And unfortunately, it might not benefit all the people out there who were impacted by it, but at the end of the day, to see some logic prevail will make me
It'll
happy.
Be a moral victory.
It will be a
yes.
moral victory.
I think if Professor Zelensky had driven into the city in April 2020 and tried to hold a class there, he would have had a very difficult time doing so.
Yeah, he might have been arrested, which
it's possible.
All right, guys, thank you again for joining me for this discussion. As we stated, there are going to be many more over the next several years. So stay tuned out there, tax fans. We've got a lot more to discuss with respect to the convenience rule, and we've got a lot more to discuss with respect to all sorts of state and local tax issues, not only in New York and California and Massachusetts, but all over the continental United States and even Hawaii and Alaska. So until next time, I have been Joe Tantillo. This is State Tax Talks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans. The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.